Hey, everybody, it's a Tuesday edition of the Shay Anything podcast. Doug Williams alongside Adam Fisher for this episode. We're happy to have him aboard. A couple of things before we get into it. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review to Shay Anything on whatever app you use for your podcasts. Also, I announced it last week. I'll reiterate it again. This year, SNY will be partnering with the Queens Baseball Convention for its sixth annual gathering of Mets fans. And here's the big news. Shay Anything will be doing a live podcast on location at the QBC. It's at Catch in Astoria, January 19th. Tickets will be on sale starting November 23rd at 10 a.m. For more information, follow SNY on social media. We'll provide you with the latest details there. There will be panels. Keith Hernandez will be there. Other ex-Mets to be announced soon. So we'll be there as well. We hope you join us at the Queens Baseball Convention. Without further ado, Adam Fisher, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Doug. It's always fun to be on the podcast.
Yeah, we had you on before, and it was so good and so newsworthy that Andy Martino did a write-up about your appearance on there. And it's actually coming full circle because what you talked about was Peter Alonso and the Mets' reasoning behind not bringing him up last year, which was so rational and roster-based. And I think it was smart of Andy to do what he did, which was to, there was this, you know, angry mob mentality of like, why aren't the Mets calling him up? And you made such good points. Andy wrote it up, and I think that was a good decision. So Andy's in Carlsbad, California right now. He's at the GM meetings. And what's great about having Adam on today is that he's, of course, the former senior director of baseball ops for the Mets, but last year was the assistant GM of the Braves, which means that he was at the winter meetings last year. Where were they last year?
They were in Arizona last year, I believe.
Okay. So...
My brain is... No, they were in Orlando.
Oh, Orlando. Okay, so you were in Orlando last year at the GM meetings. We actually played some video, random B-roll of the GM meetings last year, which was thrilling video of a bunch of people just walking around, and there in the background of one of the shots was Adam Fisher. Can you... We're actually going to welcome Andy on the phone a little bit later on the show because I want to have you kind of go back and forth with him in terms of what he's witnessing this year at the winter meetings, what you remember from last year and in years past. Why are they important or why are they unimportant? What's going on right now in Carlsbad?
Sure. I think they're, well, I don't think they're necessarily important enough. And we talked a little bit about this on Baseball Night in New York last night. I don't think they're necessarily important enough to have the large media throng that is there. I understand, of course, why SNY is there. You know, you want to get sound bites from the GM. There's going to be newsworthy stuff, but the number of reporters there for the level of action is a little over the top because not really anything gets done in terms of transactions, or very few things get done in terms of transactions. It's all really just procedural. It's almost setting up the winter. You know, the GMs get together. There's a meeting during the day. There's an assistant GM session. Then there's, you know, an assistant GM and GM session and just a GM's on their own session where you're talking about rules. You're talking about industry trends. I saw John Paul Morosi tweeted about the idea of eliminating the trading deadline or pushing the trading deadline back. That's something that we discussed last year at the GM meetings. There was a lot of debate. You have breakout sessions where you meet, maybe you might have four or five other clubs in that breakout session, and you discuss, we did discuss, okay, if you eliminated the trade, if you moved it back to August 15th, would that make sense? If you eliminated it, if you changed sort of the thought behind it, all these different angles. So that's the type of thing that gets discussed at the GM meetings when you're actually in these meetings. And then when you're not in the official meetings, you get a chance to meet with agents or meet with other teams. But again, it's just setting the scene. For example, last year I was representing the Braves. We had just hired our general manager, so he wasn't really involved. And I led a meeting with Brody Van Wagenen and his group at CAA. They basically, all of the agents that worked with him that were there at the GM meetings, probably five other agents, and they had maybe 20 clients. And, you know, we went over all the clients, what they were looking for, kind of what they're just very rough terms,
right?
What they're thinking. You know, at the time, the Braves were interested in Todd Frazier. You know, we became a Met. We talked about Todd Frazier. We talked about some of their other high-profile clients who the Braves might have interest in. Then, you know, your talking at sort of, you teased this, Doug, and made fun of it, but, you know, there is some cocktail hours and some dinners where, you know, you're just kind of talking to people with other teams, yeah. getting to know them, but also maybe, okay, what are you guys interested in? What are you thinking you're going to do this offseason? What do you know about this coach who might be available? Those kinds of things. So it's totally useful, and it's a great part of the baseball calendar. I would look forward to it, you know, as a baseball executive, even though some of it can be kind of boring. But in terms of action and what's happening for fans and media interest, there's just not a whole lot going on.
Well, let me ask you this, because I love that you met with Brody. It's convenient for our conversation and for where Brody is right now that we can talk about that. So you met with Brody and the CAA baseball team last year. And the takeaway from that, at least in my brain, is that's fascinating because he's on the other side of the table right now. So, but you mentioned the GM at the Braves last year had just gotten hired, so you were the one who was entrenched in those conversations. Do you think Brody this year is having those meetings himself? Do you think that this may be more important for him than other GMs, even new GMs across baseball, because he's never done this before, and this is his first chance, his first opportunity to sit on the other side of the table?
I think definitely, and here's the difference. You know, Brody has had, what, roughly a week or so to settle in. Now, that's not a lot, but Alex Anthopoulos, who was named the GM of the Braves, was legitimately named during the GM meetings.
Okay, so that...
So he did not... He could have come to that meeting, but it was sort of like, you guys have been setting the scene. You guys have been talking to all these guys for the offseason, so handle it for now, and I'll jump in as I start to get settled.
Right.
In this case, Brody is not settled, but he's getting there, and I think it is really important for him to head up the group, and sitting on the other side of the table is going to be... It's going to be a little weird for him. I think, you know, very different, but he's certainly very familiar with how these things work.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by a couple things, because I think your point that maybe it's overcovered by the media is interesting. I think that comes from your experience of being there and knowing that the media members that are there aren't necessarily getting, you know, breaking news info, things that are happening at this moment in time, things that are anywhere close to set in stone. However, you know, if you're the average fan, even if you're me, I'm not far removed from just being an average fan. I see John Heyman tweeting about the Yankees and some arms they may be interested in. There's a lot of writers who are finding mini scoops, not anything, as I said, that's set in stone, but, you know, you talk to somebody in the Yankees front office who said, we just met with the Indians and, you know, we're just having entry-level conversations about Corey Kluber. That, to me, is interesting. If we hear that the Mets are kicking the tires with Manny Machado's team, like, for any fan at home, that's why you want the media at the GM meetings, because at least it gives you something.
I just think that it's so early and premature for these types of things. Most of the stuff that you and I don't really disagree. I think there should be some media presence there. You know, national columnists, maybe, you know, a beat writer or two. You know, local television stations, that kind of thing makes sense. Networks, but just it's definitely oversaturated, and most of this stuff is not. It's fun. Yeah, the Yankees having a conversation about Corey Kluber. But really, it's just so preliminary.
Right.
And, you know, those nuggets that you're hearing, that stuff changes. It flips in 2 weeks. You know?
I'm also biased because we rely at 6 o'clock Monday through Friday during the offseason of Baseball Night in New York on nuggets. Like, nuggets Nuggets are our show for like 2 months because.
Right. But as of right now, those nuggets, give it, I'd say, 2 weeks.
To really
yeah,
count
it's just
on the nuggets
early.
In terms
those,
of trustworthiness.
Those little pieces of news right now, it's just everything is very preliminary. And I hope that the Mets get a chance to sit down with Manny Machado's group. But They may talk to that group and also be talking about other players. You know, they're interested. There's so many relievers out there.
Right.
You know, you kind of have to do that type of thing. But a lot of times it just becomes sort of misreported because, yeah, they're meeting about, you know, they're meeting with Boris. And it's like, oh, are they interested in Bryce Harper? It's like, well, Boris has about a million clients.
Right. Okay.
You know, so that's kind of how it goes.
So some actual news from last night, right after we got off the air, Adam and I on Baseball Night in New York, Brody Van Wagenen spoke for the first time since he got to the GM meetings. And mainly the main takeaway from what he said was about Peter Alonso. We want to play that for you, talk about it on the other side.
He has a burning desire to succeed, and he communicated that very clearly to me, and I told him that we're going to give him every opportunity to try to capitalize on that, both in the short term and the long term. He will be going to big league camp, and we'll try to get him as many bats as we can and see if we can make a decision in terms of how ready he is. But he's going to continue to work hard on his defense. He's going to continue to be an impact player offensively, and we'll see how it shakes out. Well, my philosophy is to try to put the best 25 guys on the field. You know, it may be a cliche, but I think he has a chance to be an impact player, and you know, our goal is to try to have as many impact guys on the field as we can.
Okay, so again, tying this full circle, Adam, you are on this podcast at the end of last season saying it makes total sense for the front office not to call him up right now. If you are going to be upset about losing Chase and Bradford last year,
yep,
you can't be upset about not calling up Peter Alonso. And the argument that you made perfect sense. It did not make sense last year. Now the outcry on Twitter is in Andy Martino's mentions, because Andy tweeted yesterday, it is malpractice to call up Peter Alonso to start on opening day because of usage. You can move him back 2 weeks, just like Chris Bryant and the Cubs, have him for an extra year. And I'm approximating with the 2 weeks. I think it's something around there. So what is the conversation here? I guess there are two, Adam, with Peter Alonso, and we're going to bring in Andy in just a second for California, but there are two. There is he qualified to start on opening day? Forget any of the extra baggage that comes with it. And the second part is, if he is your best option at first base, which I believe he probably is in the Mets organization right now, would you, in that front office, in that coaching staff, make that decision like, hey, be patient, let's wait it out. A year is more important than 2 weeks in April.
See, I'm not totally sure that I don't agree 100% with Andy. I think it's up for discussion what you want to do with that situation, with delaying the year of service. A couple things with Peter Alonso. Not to throw cold water on it, I'm not sure how he's going to age as a player. He's not young right now. I'm not sure I'm that concerned about the seventh year. I'm more concerned about winning now. So 2 weeks is 2 weeks, but what are we talking about?
Eight to ten games.
We don't have, you know, he's a heavy body type. We have questions about his defense. Brody alluded to it. I agree with what Brody said. I really like that desire to succeed that he's shown. He's a hard worker. I think he's going to get better at first base. I think he can handle it, but he's not very good over there. That's not just a rumor, you know. And that body type, he's going to have to stay on top of it. He's a big guy. So year seven is awfully far out. Now, if you're talking about how does he evolve and maybe you want to trade him, that extra year also can become important as well. But I think it's up for discussion. Yes, the safe play is to wait, and we know that they're probably going to have some people who can cover that. Jay Bruce, you know, is going to be around and can play first base. They'll have a right-handed option. TJ Rivera should be healthy. Wilmer Flores, we don't know if he's going to be tendered or not. So, look, they should have options to cover that you know, two-week period if they do decide to delay the service, but I'm not sure it's a slam dunk. I do think Peter Alonso is ready, and if he has a really good spring training, they're going to have to think hard about it.
So you and I were talking before the show, and I equated what Brody Van Wagenen was doing yesterday was almost politician-like. The reason I say that is he has, the old administration has left. He is the new face of the Mets organization in front office. So his job, in some ways almost, is to say the right things to the fan base, right? He wants to say the right things. He wants to get the fan base excited. So it's easy for him at this point, and correct me if I'm wrong, to say, yeah, you know what? I went out to Arizona, and I wanted to show him the respect he deserves. Again, that's music to Mets fans' ears.
Right.
I wanted to watch him play. I want the best 25 players on our 25-man roster. I want to win the most games as possible. I don't care about the other stuff. All of that sounds great to Mets fans. Do you think that that is what Brody Van Wagenen believes, and as soon as we break from spring training, He won't care about roster issues, any of it. He wants the best team for the best team's sake. Or do you think he's just kind of saying that for now and will realize after camp breaks out in Port St. Lucie that it's actually a little bit more difficult to implement those things?
I think what you just said, you know, it's sort of a layup right now. I mean, you know, Peter Alonso was somewhat disgruntled, but in a lot of ways, the feedback that I got from that clubhouse was that the players weren't really excited about a young kid stepping out and speaking up like that. But, you know, it makes sense for Brody to come in and, you know, this prospect was upset. He can say, hey, I'm a new voice and I believe in you as a player. And we're going to take this over the course of the offseason. I think you could be a big part of this. And once he gets into spring training, though, all bets are off. I mean, you're talking about a competition. He said he at least put the caveat in there. We're going to get him a lot of at-bats and we're going to see how he does and, you know, that kind of thing. So, look, there's still going to be competition. They're still going to have to play some games in spring training, and he has an out for what he said.
Right.
But it does make perfect sense from his standpoint coming in as a new guy and saying, hey, we respect you. We think you're going to be a great player. Another step back, he's also coming at it from an agent standpoint, honestly. And agents, they like players, and they believe in prospects who are coming through
right,
there.
They're on the player's side of
they're
every
on the
negotiation.
Player's side. So, like, he doesn't have the inside. And I think that the Mets think Peter Alonso can hit. I don't think that's a question. But he also doesn't have the insight or the inside information that they right. have as an organization about this guy and some of the other things that maybe went into that decision. Majority was roster. But the defense wasn't great. And, you know, there was a definite, as much as fans want to scoff about it, there was a definite thought and a process that went behind that decision. So Brody doesn't have insight into that. He's coming in, like you said, almost from a PR standpoint. Let's make this guy happy because there's no real downside to it.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating point you make and one that we should be making more often. Agents are on the player's side of every negotiation. It must be an adjustment to then go to the business side of it. You know, you've been rooting for these guys and having an involvement financially yourself
right.
as an agent. And now you have to kind of look at it from the other perspective, which is a more rational, wait 2 weeks. 2 weeks yeah. in the grand scheme of things is not a big deal. So I want to bring in Andy, who's in Carlsbad. He's in his hotel room joining us on the Shane Anything podcast. Andy, first of all, appreciate you calling in and helping us out. Second of all, we talked last week, I believe it was, about how after Brody's initial press conference, we didn't get much details from him. Obviously, we got a lot of the big picture. We heard from him finally yesterday about some more specifics. How do you think he came off? What was your read on the situation?
Well, I'm happy to talk to you guys. It's a real rock star situation here. I just cleared out a lot of people from this room and a lot of substances to make this happen. So have you seen Almost Famous? I assume you have.
Yes, I have. Have you?
I like Almost Famous, but I'm curious as to you like this movie, Andy. Okay.
Yeah,
it's okay. It's corny.
Oh, there you go.
Gosh.
See, there you go.
I just like the movie. Okay,
my
continue.
My point is that I'm living that lifestyle out here. So I thought he was fine, Brody, yesterday. I certainly hope he. That was when I heard that when he said that thing about Alonso and starting the season, I was like, I hope he doesn't mean it because that'd be dumb. It'd be crazy to let this guy play on opening day. So you know that's something that he better not mean for the sake of the Mets. But as I was listening to you guys talking after I got patched in, and I agree with what you said, Adam, about there's no real downside to saying it now. Dom Smith didn't get a dinner. That's too bad. He's a pretty good first baseman. I was thinking about that, too. Adam, what do you think? Like,
well, Adam,
how could Smith and Alonso coexist in this organization, or do they have to choose?
You disagree with the fact that
right.
Andy thinks it's
well,
crazy.
Right. I don't necessarily. I know where you're coming from, Andy. I don't necessarily think it's crazy. I think he gave himself an out. You know, he's going to get a lot of at bats. We're going to see how he does. So I think ultimately they'll probably wait the 2 weeks and be on the safe side.
Right.
But
why
I
not?
Also I don't love Peter Alonso's body type. I don't think he's going to age particularly well. I'm not sure I'm that concerned about the seventh year. But I generally agree with your overall point.
And can I make
I hear you on that, but there's so much consternation over on the back end when these players work out. Like, can you imagine if they only have one more year of DeGrom instead of two? That would suck.
Yeah.
No. And that's fair. And also, I made the point to Doug that, you know, from a trade value standpoint, say they want to trade him in, in a year, it's nice to have that extra year as well.
Can I ask a question to both of you? I'm not sure if you'll both know the answer or none of you, but when Chris Bryant, when that happened to Chris Bryant, it was such, there was such an outcry from Cubs fans and everybody in baseball, like, how can they do this? It was almost like people didn't know why they were doing it. That was my read on it. So couldn't you just tell if you're Brody and you realize, you smarten up in spring training, you realize, okay, we have to keep him for an extra couple weeks. Why does it matter? Can't you just tell the fan base, like, he'll be up? You know, this is just a procedural thing. Or are is there something wrong for some reason with
announcing
that?
It's still sort of a taboo type thing. I mean,
you're not allowed to admit it,
because you can't really admit that you're manipulating the service rules.
I mean, but if everybody knows that's what you're doing, why?
Yeah, but if you
know, look, this next CBA is up
in
2022, and they need to address it. But right now, you still can't really say, oh, yeah, yeah, we want to get an extra year of service. You know, so we're going to, it's got to be, well, you know, we're not so sure. We think that he could use another 2 weeks in AAA. I mean, hey, it's BS, but that's just how you have to operate.
Yeah, Andy, it's like you're not allowed to publicly say that you're manipulating a system that is in place so you can do exactly what it provides.
Exactly. It's one of those shady little things where the part of the reason that the public, well, I was going to say part of the reason the public doesn't understand is that they're not, it's not, teams aren't able to explain it, but that would be shortchanging the public. I think people who pay close attention to baseball and are real fans understand exactly what's going on here, and they're still just like, you want to win every game. Like Brody said yesterday, April's just as important as September, so why wouldn't you? So I understand, like, as a from a competitive standpoint, but this isn't the NFL. You do have a long season, and if you think that you can't win for 2 weeks without Peter Alonso, you probably don't have much of a team around him, right?
Right. Well, and what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that the Mets proved that those first 2 weeks don't necessarily matter.
Right. That's true, yeah. The 10-1 or 11-1.
Unfortunately.
Andy, I also want to ask you, because we were talking, I think, before you got patched in, about the GM meetings in general, and Adam made some points that I found interesting, which were that he understands probably why the media covers it, maybe not to the extent that they do, just because so many of these things are so preliminary. So you've been there for, what, just under 24 hours now? How has your reporting gone, and how many things have you learned that you didn't know before you got there?
Well, as a reporter, it's probably more valuable, Adam, than I understand what you're saying, because it's not a time of a lot of transactions, obviously.
Yep.
The World Series just ended, but it's just valuable to be able to go, it could FaceTime with GMs around the league who you may not know as well as your local GMs, and get the chance to touch base with agents. And I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm just sitting outside having my coffee and breakfast this morning, and, you know, Brody walks by, 2 minutes of chatting with him, a couple agents walk by, someone from the Indians walks by so I can ask about what's going on with their pitching rather than just read reports about it. So it's valuable that way. Mm-hmm. You pick up incremental pieces of information. And also just, you know, someone is probably better odds that somebody gives you a call back when you need them later in the winter if you've had the chance to interact with them face-to-face here. So it's that kind of stuff.
All right, Andy, so one more thing I want to ask is your reporting yesterday on the coaching staff changes the Mets are making. I'll ask you to do two things. First, just refresh everybody on what exactly has happened. And second, let us know what exactly is driving this these decisions. Is it Brody Van Wagenen wanting new faces and names in his coaching staff, or is this Mickey Callaway? Because oftentimes you hear managers making these types of decisions. Is this Mickey Callaway wanting some of his own guys?
Well, they let go of Pat Russler, the hitting coach. Let's go move by move. That was a curious one, and one that is sure to make some players unhappy. Look, the hitting coach position, I don't think really affects how an offense does very dramatically. That's something that, you know, gets a lot of attention, that job, but at the end of the day, like, if you arrive to the major leagues and you need a lot of help hitting, you're probably not, or, you know, in the major leagues. So it's not a real teaching league. But these guys, so it's important that they have chemistry with players, that they're good dudes who can give you feedback and be trusted. And that's what Six, which is what they call Russler, is in that clubhouse. So I assume this is Brody throwing Mickey a bone. The two of them didn't have great chemistry, is my understanding, Callaway and Russler. Russler came with Kevin Long in a totally different time in a different regime from the Yankees was not a Mickey hire. Most teams like to give the managers fair latitude with their coaching staff, and maybe that was the bone to throw Mickey when you're basically by moving Gary DeSarcina from the bench to third base, which is another thing they did. You're telling Mickey between the lines that he needs more help and he wasn't great in game and needs a more experienced bench coach. So maybe it's one thing that was tougher for him to hear and one thing that was like, okay, but you can have your own hitting coach. And removing Ricky Bonus is another kind of weird one. To me, I know Adam worked there for many years and Ricky was there, so maybe you'd have thoughts. I just know that he was really someone who was well-liked among the generation of specifically Latin American players that he worked with, whether it's Familia, who is, of course, now gone, or for so many of these guys. He was very close with Bartolo Colon. And with a team, like any team that has a lot of Latin American players who primarily speak Spanish, it's important to have a Spanish-speaking coach. So that's something to consider as they replace him. I don't know. Ricky was another one that was a holdover from another era, so I guess they gave Callaway some latitude in shaping his staff going forward. Oh, and Ruben Amaro from first base to the front office, which surprised everybody. I ran into somebody from the Mets front office. I was like, I found out about that when you guys did. So who knows about that one?
So I think to touch on Ricky, Ricky's a really good pitching coach. He's well-respected. I think it just comes down to a similar to what you said about Rustler. You know, you've got a new pitching coach, Dave Island, who, you know, Ricky's not his guy, and a manager who's a pitching guy. So, you know, they probably want their own guy at the end of the day. Ricky's an organizational guy. He's been up at the major league level for a while now. And, you know, he's a good coach. He'll be an asset in the Mets minor league system. And, you know, I'd love to see Ricky get a chance as a pitching coach somewhere. It may not be with the Mets, but he's certainly capable. And, yes, as you noted, Andy, bilingual, just a really good guy. So and to skip back to Pat Rustler, you know, both six, as Andy mentioned, he's called, and Kevin Long are just excellent hitting coaches. But, you know, they were brought in sort of in the middle of Terry's tenure. And, I heard the same thing. Maybe the chemistry wasn't great between the two. And, you know, that being Mickey and Pat. And, you know, again, Mickey wants his own guy. They're throwing him a bone with some of that coaching staff shakeup, and he can get his own hitting coach. So I'd only take a step back again and say Pat Rustler's one of my favorite people in baseball. He's an excellent hitting coach, and he's an asset to any organization. However, you see these hitting coaches recycled. They bounce around, and I understand organizational decisions. Sometimes when it comes to personalities, you have to move on from good coaches.
And I don't want to give Adam's opinion for him, but I do want to hear Andy's reporting maybe on the topic and just his general sense of what's going on, because obviously the bench coach job is now vacant. And Harp wrote, our colleague John Harper wrote, I believe it was last week or maybe this weekend even, about Jim Riggleman as the possibility. A scout had told him that the Mets need an experienced bench coach, a National League guy who knows the ins and outs of in-game managing. So, Andy, what do you think of that possibility? What do you think? Do you think there's 100% chance that basically they're going to hire an experienced guy if it's not Riggleman, somebody like him?
They seem to have reacted to that concept in a positive way, that they need a more experienced bench coach. So, yeah, I would expect them to go in that direction. Riggleman's a name that's already out there because of Harper's column, but he will be just one of, I think, what will turn out to be plenty of guys in the mix. It doesn't seem like they're in a huge hurry to fill this position. And it's an interesting hire for them, because if Callaway ever is not the manager suddenly in season, because that's how baseball goes sometimes, you're looking at possibly the next manager of the Mets, even if on an interim basis. So they probably have to take a close look at that person. It has to be a mix of somebody who meshes well with Callaway, knows what he's doing, and, you know, could potentially be a manager for a couple of months, although that's taking it, you know, that's taking it far. But if we talk about Pat Rustler not being Callaway's hire, well, Callaway wasn't Brody's hire, so you do have to think ahead to these things a little bit. Adam, when you guys, if you're in a front office and you guys are hiring a position like this, are you secretly thinking about, if not even saying it, like, could this guy be an interim skipper some point, and is that somewhere in your mind?
Well, I think you want to consider that, but you also want to consider, okay, who else on the staff could be who else on the staff could be the manager.
Right, it's not always the bench coach, right?
It doesn't necessarily have to be the bench coach. I guess at, considering the current group, I would probably lean towards Sherlock, who almost just got demoted. He's been a bench coach. He's a very experienced National League guy, honestly. He wouldn't be a bad bench coach. But, you know, the timing is going to be a little challenging for them just because we've sort of skipped past the coaching, hiring, manager hiring time, which was this past month, these past 5 weeks. So, you know, you take someone from someone else's coaching staff, that kind of stuff can be challenging when you start to get into December, because then there, you know, that's sort of how we're looking here. You know, that we're in November now, but over the course of the next 3 weeks, they probably do their search and then they try to hire someone in December. That's pretty late if you're going to be poaching, say, a third base coach or someone like that from someone else's coaching staff. So they're going to be surveying the landscape. Maybe there's some coaches who have experience who are in the minor leagues. That's probably your best bet in terms of letting an organization letting you talk to somebody. Doug and I talked about this before. I have nothing against Jim Riggleman. If they decide and they go through their whole process and they decide that, okay, Riggleman is the best choice because there's maybe, I hate to say by default, but maybe there's not another guy out there necessarily who fits the bill as an experienced guy, then I'm okay with that. But if you look at Riggleman's track record, and again, this isn't always the coach's fault. You can't always choose where you wind up. And the talent level hasn't been great with some of the teams he's been with. But, you know, he was Brian Price's bench coach the last, I think, 4 years, 3.5 years, and that did not go well. So that does not excite me. I'd like to see some other candidates. Riggleman just seems like he's out there. People are talking about it. And, oh, yeah, yeah, let's just hire Riggleman. It's like, you know, he's been, I think, on losing teams 17 or 18 years out of 20 years as a coach. I mean, it's not, or whatever, you know, 20 out of 23, whatever it is, it's not pretty.
Right. And my response to you, Adam, before we came on the show was basically that my requirements for like the prereqs for this, the person who takes this job are not all that tied closely to wins and losses at their previous role. Like when I look at Riggleman, I just know that he has dealt with in-game managing in the National League. And I don't think that I look at his tenure in Cincinnati and think, okay, the record's bad. He was under what ended up being kind of a bad manager in Brian Price. This guy would kind of not be a good hire because of that. I'm almost thinking of it in terms of, is he a unexciting hire? Yes, in some ways. But I just want to make sure the Mets bring in a guy to be a bench coach who, you know, knows the ins and outs of middle of the game in July when half your bullpen is available and you've got three guys on the bench because one of your guys has a sore shin. Like, that's the kind of thing that Mickey Callaway struggled with Gary DeSarcina last year. I just want somebody with some experience, even whether it's really good or bad.
My comeback to that would just be, you know, Mickey had some issues, but Brian Price had issues for four straight years, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, that's like a good point.
I don't know. The same type of things we heard about Mickey, we heard about Brian Price.
What do you think, Andy, before you go?
Oh, hey, I'm still here. I think that they're good. In terms of guys who have experience, one thing I'm just hearing from a source now, they're going to look at former Cleveland Indians manager Lou Brown, who would be somebody who's got a lot of experience, has won in Cleveland.
He's currently working at Tire World.
Right. And I would, I don't know, I wouldn't, when it comes to coaching hires, like, it is what it is. Like, it's not going to win or lose you too many games. They just need someone who knows how to run a game. I think you make a really good point, Adam, about Riggleman maybe not advising Brian Price the right way, if you really want to parse it, although you can never really know how that went down. Brian Price did not have a good tenure, obviously, in Cincinnati. So I don't know. I wonder if they'd take a look at Tony DeFrancesco, who's a respected longtime guy who was a AAA manager. That's an Alderson hire, but someone like that is just, you know, a baseball guy who knows the game.
How about Tom Gamboa, who was nice enough to come visit us in studio? Some that's just what I'm thinking of. Somebody who knows the game inside and out.
Look, they will be going through hitting up all their contacts and going through every team's coaching staff, their farm system, everyone who's in the game, front offices. They will be doing a wide informational search to try to come up with a list of about 8 to 12 guys. I'm sure Riggleman will be among them. And then they will kind of make their choice, start talk to five or six of them and make their choice. And I also, just to take it back, Andy, you probably remember this. You know, Riggleman was a finalist with Bob Guerin way back in 2011, or 2012, excuse me. Terry originally started with
Canola. Oh, yeah, Terry wanted Riggleman.
I'm not so sure about that.
Well, if I remember this, well, you would know more than me, and I'm trying to think back.
The idea, this is the way it went down, as far as I remember, was that Riggleman was kind of the favorite, but Bob basically blew everybody away with his information. He was just so prepared and so on top of everything that I believe at the end of the day, Terry wanted Bob. It was Terry's choice.
Well, that's interesting because Terry's staff went the next couple of years thinking that Bob was a spy for Sandy in the front office, and there was a lot of weird energy there. So.
Oh, yeah, no, all of that was true, and you know, Bob was definitely like a pure analytics guy, and there was some tension there. But to start off the day, Bob was a consensus choice of the front office and Terry.
I almost
let me tell a story. One time in spring training, I'm on one of the backfields, and one of the coaches at the time comes up. I had been chatting with Guerin, and one of the coaches comes up to me. He's like, "Oh, what'd your friend Bob have to tell you? Spying on us again? Blah 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 blah." So,
I almost want whoever they hire to like bomb the interview, like to have like tobacco in their mouth, not presenting any information, just saying like, "I know how to do it. I've been there before." Like, I don't need to bring you some huge pamphlet full of information. I just know how to manage the sixth inning of a game.
I'd like to pass along this nugget, Doug, to rebuke you here. Bob Guerin has been the bench coach in the World Series.
It's not against Bob Guerin.
Three of the last 4 years.
I just don't think that you can ace a bench coach interview in the middle of the winter. Like, that's not the guy that I think necessarily, like, that's
well,
not.
What the hell do you know about it, Williams?
I don't know anything, Andy. I'm just here talking, man. That's what we do.
But it's interesting, you know, that whole thing is not, it, obviously Andy's alluding to the politics of the clubhouse, and the politics down there are very interesting to give an insider's view. It can get ugly and a little dirty, but Bob was never a spy. He just was very open-minded and willing to not really toe anyone's line. And right. I respect that about Bob.
I think so. It's kind of a witch hunt.
I like Bob too, but as you know, this coaching staff intrigue is always interesting because everyone assumes that these guys are in lockstep when in fact they're always sniping each other. Who's got a 2-year deal? Who's talking to the GM? All this stuff is kind of fun.
All right, Andy. Well, can you like clean away the beer cans, cigarette butts, and you know, get a nice hot shower, maybe a cup of coffee, and move on from your day post almost famous night in Carlsbad?
Nope. It's back to the party.
All right. Well, glad we're sending you out there to work hard. Thank you for coming on your own podcast.
Thank you for having me on my podcast.
All right. So I think that was interesting. And Adam, before we go, is there anything that changes as the days move on? I know it's a short, the GM meetings are not, what are they, 2 days, 3 days?
Yeah, it's the same type.
What's next is what I'm asking.
What's today's, today's Tuesday. Really, today's the first day of meetings. So you've got yesterday, everyone kind of arrived, and there's you know, they get together, people start to talk, the different teams. And then today's the first day of meetings. There's another day of meetings tomorrow, and then strictly the GMs on Thursday morning, and then everyone leaves. So between there, you know, you've got, like I talked about, rules meetings, procedural meetings. The Mets group will get a chance to meet with other teams. They'll get a chance to meet with agents and hear what they have to say about their clients. There'll be a formal media session, which is where you spied me, I think, on video, standing around. That there's a formal media session where just the GMs speak to their group of reporters. But, you know, that's not really pertinent to Brody because he has so much media that he's having these types of sessions pretty much every day. And you know, that's really it. So it's basically 2.5 more days.
It's a meet and greet and a mixer and a conference all in one.
It is. That's
fascinating.
Fair.
All right. So that's going to do it once again. Please subscribe, rate, and review to the Shea Anything podcast, especially review us. Say some nice things. Say some mean things. Say however you feel. This is America, after all, and it's an election day. So Make sure your opinions are heard.
And maybe, well, by the time you hear this, won't have a chance to vote anymore.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, we hope you did your civic duty. Adam, thank you for coming on. Always a pleasure to have you. We appreciate your insight. Our thanks to Andy Martino, I guess, sort of, kind of, for just jumping on the phone in his hotel room. Quite the sacrifice he made to talk to us. But we'll be back hopefully next week to chat more with you. I'm sure we'll know more at that time as we move closer and closer to the winter meetings, which are just a fancier meet and greet and mixer.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug, for
having me on. And a fancier mixer where more transactions actually happen.
Yeah. And you have to be prepared for actual breaking news. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk soon.